here at the station, known for her kindness, curiosity, wit, and the ability to navigate in very different worlds. Julie made the Art Focus Show a weekly forum for local visual artists to discuss their work. Over the years, she interviewed hundreds and hundreds of local artists. She also spoke with gallery owners, curators, and international celebrities such as Spalding Gray and Christo and Jean-Claude. Julie was raised in Portland Heights. She attended Catlin Gable School. As a young woman, she moved to New York to attend Sarah Lawrence College, graduating with a degree in fine art. She returned to Portland after the war, married attorney Bill Bernard, and raised a family of four. Later, she got a degree in early childhood education and began a career as a preschool teacher. In the late 1980s, Julie was interviewed by artist Jim Klauschnitzer. She talked about her days as an art student in New York and about the importance of her teacher, the artist Concetta Scaravaglioni.
Concetta Scaravaglioni was a tiny little Italian woman, and she was a mighty person. And I think she had, in my youth, a very good effect on me. She was an activist, really. Her English wasn't very good, but the sculpture that she did was huge, and for a tiny person, she created these tremendous sculptures. Mm-hmm. She was a very good friend of Theodore Zorach, who was living down at the village at that time, and she took us down to visit him. He was gave her a lot of support, because women at that time, there were very few women who were doing the kind of work that she was doing, uh-huh. and there weren't very many women painters. And if you were in doing art like that, you needed a lot of support. But she was very helpful to me, and I really was not a sculptor. I'd really graduated in painting when I took painting from Kurt Rusch, who showed in New York. But I think that her mightiness had a lot to do with my being kind of courageous in art in the early days. And being that she was a woman, and there were so few women doing the kind of thing that she did, I just thought a lot of her. I was such a young Oregonian, naive Oregonian person, and I came to New York and was just really into drawing trees and leaves, and I didn't understand the cubist point of view at all, which is what Kurt Rusch taught. Mm. He taught in the tradition of Picasso and Wang Gri and Braque, and I didn't understand that at all. I took a painting course from him. He was very difficult for me, and the second year they wouldn't allow me to take a course from him, and then I took Scaravaglioni's course, and then took her course in both the winter and the summer, and came back to Rusch then after I'd learned a little something about what Cubism was about. And I was stubborn because I would not get into the Cubist tradition. And finally, I began to see the light. I got very thoroughly into Cubism, and I'm still a Cubist-minded. I understand space that way. Mm-hmm. I like abstractions, but I do think that I have a tendency to understand and be attracted by work that has some Cubist elements in it. I've gotten now so I can recognize integrity. I know when it's got it and when it hasn't, no matter what it is. This is hard for me to explain, but I know. I don't care what anybody else says or thinks.
My name is Jamie Hampton. I'm the artistic director of Body Vox, a contemporary dance theater company in Portland. I knew Julie Bernard since I was a child. She was a dear family friend. She and her husband, Bill, were friends of my parents, John and Carol Hampton, and probably got to know Julie really closely when several families every year would go up to Spirit Lake at the foot of Mount St. Helens, and we would be up there in August for a week, 10 days, and we would float around in this lake that felt like it was in the high 30s in temperature. Probably a little more than that, but it was bracingly cold. And Julie was kind of the instigator of an event that happened every year called the Bag Skits. And Julie would fill various grocery bags full of props, hats, glasses, feather boas, a book, maybe a ukulele. I don't know. It was ever whatever was within arm's reach of her imagination. And her imagination was very broad. So given whatever the day's availabilities happened to be, these bag skits were always fascinating because they were like treasure troves. And I only wish there had been video back then, because if we had videos of Julie Bernard's inspired bag skits, it would rival the best surrealist art that ever went down in history. I left Portland in 72. I went away to Dartmouth College, and I started dancing at that point. And Julie was always an artist. She was really one of the most creative people that any of us knew. And her art took the form probably mostly in her relationships with other people and in the way that she appreciated the artistic pursuits of anybody. And for me, I think we started having more to talk about because I was involved in dance at a very intense level. I was eventually touring around the world rather constantly, it seemed like. And so her eyes would light up when we would see each other. I don't know, she had this sense of, she would look in your eyes and you knew that she saw you for who you were, and she always saw the joy and beauty in people. And there are a few people like that. There are a few, and there are few. Someone who really sees the best in others. And I guess that's what I felt about her.
My name is Tom Kramer. I'm a Portland artist and muralist. And I first met Julie because she was, you know, friends of my family. So it goes way, way back, probably to my early childhood. But I knew Julie in the most significant way because I was her first guest, along with Marco Polo, on Art Focus. And that was, in the mid-80s sometime. I was her first guest on Art Focus. And then later, I not only was often a guest on Art Focus, but I actually substituted. I was kind of one of her main substitutes. We sort of hit it off immediately, and she took me seriously when other people didn't and defended me and just became a great friend. We went out to lunch on a regular basis. So I had a really good friendship with her. Never thought about, you know, ageism or the fact she was 35 or 40 years older than me. She was just always, I thought of her as actually younger than me. And she was always, if anything, I was sort of the one that was kind of a curmudgeon about new things happening in the art scene, whereas she would always defend the most cutting-edge stuff going on. She was eternally youthful, eternally optimistic, and whenever I spent time with her, I felt not only better about myself, but better about the entire world. She really was one of those rare people who made the world a better place on all levels. One of the reasons she's really important to the why Portland's great and everything, her maiden name was a Schauffler, and her relative Manuel Schauffler was the head of Catlin Gable High School when I went there in the late 70s. And at that time, it was really like Black Mountain College, or it was a very alternative place. It has no resemblance or even relationship to how it is now. Anyway, she was kind of a reflection of that old Portland Unitarian free-thinking kind of legacy. And she was born in Portland and had a very kind of bohemian, or at least an appreciation of bohemia from a very early age. And her extended family, they're all really great people.
You did some work for Julie that was part of the way you got to know her. Can you describe that, how you started doing work for her?
My dad was a Portland lawyer, and Julie Bernard's husband was one of his best buddy, you know, lawyer friends. And actually, it was through Julie's husband that he said, hey, do you want to help us clean our yard up and clean our house up? And I said, sure. I was looking for odd jobs at the time. So I used to work for them, you know, working on their yard, doing yard work and mowing their lawn and everything. And it was just amazing to work with her, Julie, because she would make us these really amazing sandwiches for lunch. And then the other person I work with was mentally challenged. And yet she treated him like he was, you know, Prince Charles. Again, I learned very early on she treated everybody with respect and dignity. Very apropos, is that how you say it, is that she was one of those rare people who crossed all social classes. I mean, she could go to a cocktail party with Princess Diana or the Queen of England and then the next night go to, you know, a party with people on welfare in St. John's and, you know, or very poor lower class people. She was comfortable with all different kinds of people. Not only that, but this is even more important, she treated everybody the same. She didn't, you know, treat people differently if they had more money or treat people less well if they didn't. She just seemed like free of all agendas and just treated people with respect across the board, you know.
My name is Jack Danger. I met Julie. I was a volunteer coordinator at KABU, and I'm not sure when that was. Her son, David, was a volunteer with the news department, and he was really, really cute and almost made me have a bisexual moment for a second. But I got over that, and he came in one day and said that his mother needed something to do. I was like, yeah, okay. And she'd really be great at hosting the arts program because she really knows the art. And I said, okay. So that's how I met her. She came in with her Queen Elizabeth coronation little white socks on. I do believe she had her John Deere hat, which she was going to bequeath to me if I gave up smoking. And if you can hear me, Julie, I gave up smoking. And she sat down, and we talked. I was probably rude and a little... She didn't look like your typical... If there was going to be a typical KABU volunteer, she was not it, on first impression. She probably had a very nice suit on. And she had, she started telling me her vitae. So I said, vitae. You know, she'd gone to Catlin Gable School and Sarah Lawrence and Vassa. And I was like, oh, for Christ's sake, you have good breeding. And we just hit it off. And she became the host of Arts Focus. And that's the story how I met her.
And you engineered for her also, right?
Yes. So I was the host. And then I became the host and I engineered for her. And she would, the night before, she would come in and she would leave a note in my box about who she was going to interview. And she started leaving me, drawing me pictures of me. And they started out like, they were actually fashion cues. Because at that time, I was a fashion flaw. And for some reason, I thought it was okay to wear baseball caps backwards and sweatpants and T-shirts. And the more she drew them, I mean, she'd have me on the radio, be talking to somebody. Jack infused pain in the ass. Jack infused this. Then I got chickens, and she started drawing the chickens. But when I noticed all the baseball caps and T-shirts, I actually got rid of the hats. It was time to go. But she definitely, I mean, when my father died, she had a picture of me at his grave saying, are you really dead? You know, she had me smoking. She had me playing the accordion. It became this thing, and I made this little book of all, I mean, there must be, I don't know, 30 pictures of her drawings that she made of me, which was very, very fun. You know, I loved her. You know, this is a perfect example. Should I just go on? This is a perfect example of community organizing, community organizations, where you have something small in common. Maybe you like trees. Maybe you like... You're an Audubon Society, maybe you like this or that, or maybe you do your community radio, and you have nothing else in common. But somehow it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter because we became like really, we really loved each other. I mean, it was just like this thing. It was just like, she was unbelievable.
And I do believe we're going to not, I'll just hum a few bars of the Art Focus theme song and go right to Art Focus. No, I want to hum it. I focus. Julie Bernard. She's there.
Oh. Allons dansons. Écoutez, répétez.
I love cubism. It's my favorite style when I see a cubist painting. I've just got a smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne,
the father of cubism. Good morning. This is Art Focus. I have with me a gorilla girl, and I'm welcoming you this morning, Anna Mendieta.
Thank you.
Who is Anna Mendieta, gorilla person?
Anna was a Cuban-born American artist who spent a lot of time in the Midwest, who moved to New York City. She did conceptual artwork. She died at a tragic death in 1984 when she fell from a 36-story window. She was married to Carl Andre, and they had had a fight, and she died of a fatal death.
And Frida Kahlo is the person who started the Gorilla Girl.
Well, she's a founding member. There were many and are many founding members. She is one, and she will be here for tonight's activity.
Good. And you both come from New York.
Yes, we do.
And that was where the Gorilla Girls were founded.
Right.
And I want to know, Gorilla, why are you a gorilla? What happened to make you one?
Well, as many people are aware, over the years there's been a lot of racism and sexism, and having been neglected because we were women artists, in 1985, excluded from a show at Museum of Modern Art, at that time we wore ski masks, and then ended up into guerrilla warfare, which is what this is really about. In reaction to being excluded from shows because we are women. And we started pointing fingers, and we realized that if we were anonymous, that we couldn't take it on a personal level, the abuse that people get when they do point fingers at racism and sexism throughout the country. And that's how we started. We really started with the New York art world. And since then, we've evolved dealing with social and political issues that are wrong with America. And there are many of us, and we're international at this point.
Mm-hmm. We should say, listeners, this morning that we are talking to Anna Mendieta, which is an alias. And the gorilla girl that we're talking to is wearing her mask and speaking to you through that mask. Is it hard wearing masks like that? Are they uncomfortable?
But those are the suffering experience that we... Look, isn't this silly? Can you believe we actually have to do this? We travel internationally wearing these things because of, just to point out the, you know, unjust issues that really deal with both the art world and our life today. I mean, I think that's really what it's a mockery about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Gorilla Girls, Anna Mendieta, speaking with Julie Bernard. Again, Jack Danger.
She was totally unflappable. She was more than just tolerant. I mean, I'm kind of like a force of nature. Well, I used to be, but now I'm kind of like whatever. You know, an old, big old dyke, but I'm, you know, I'm old. I'm kind of more mellow. Back in the day, not so mellow. And she was unflappable. And, you know, with me, and she was unflappable when she went out to cover art events. I mean, who will ever forget when George Bush came to Portland and the Reed students lined up in the middle of Fifth Avenue and threw up red, white, and blue? She did not miss a beat. She ran that tape recorder because sometimes running the tape recorder was challenging. And, you know, she was interviewing them as they were throwing up, so the sound effects was fabulous.
Jack is talking about the reverse peristalsis painters and the time that a group of them performed at a large protest outside the Hilton in downtown Portland, where Vice President Dan Quayle was headlining a fundraiser for Oregon Senator Bob Packwood. Later, Julie invited the painters to be guests on Art Focus on Thanksgiving Day.
Thanksgiving!
Thanksgiving!
And, you know, it's strange because 364 days out of the year, most Americans are out trying to get ahead.
Yes.
Trying
bark,
to
bark,
make
bark.
Money.
Consumer society.
Dog eat dog.
Take, take, take.
And then one day out of the year is spent
Thanksgiving.
They call off the consumption for a day, and we're not like that.
No, not us.
We don't celebrate Thanksgiving.
No, we choose to celebrate a different holiday.
Yeah. 364 days a year, we're celebrating Thanksgiving.
We're so thankful for everything
we understand all the wonderful things that are happening to us.
Yeah. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. But this day we call it something very different. This day we call
ungrateful taking.
Ungrateful taking. And, you know, the real irony here, the real irony...
The irony
is that we celebrate it exactly the same way most Americans celebrate Thanksgiving.
We pig out.
We're in here in the studio pigging out just like you're at home pigging out.
And now... Now, getting a little bit more organized here, what did you do that brings me to want to interview you this morning? What event in your lives caused you to have the idea to have reverse peristalsis, go and present your thing? What was your protest about?
Well, really, we identified a need for an action.
Clearly.
And that's... our goal, to be there when there's a need.
And I wouldn't call it necessarily a protest. I think that's
it's over-politicizing it.
It's over-politicizing, yes. And we're above anything, we're not political art. I think if there's a take-home message to the audience today is that we are political and we are art. So don't confuse us with political art, please, because I think the caption of message or the caption of even performance is very binding, and it's this kind of structure we're trying to break.
I think also on one level we were trying to show our support for Mr. Quayle because we were trying to give our all to
him.
Okay, so now what I'm trying to get you to do is to explain exactly what happened on the morning of May 1st or whenever it was that Mr. Quayle came to town. Vice President Quayle came to town. And had you already arranged to do this beforehand? What
not,
do you do? Let's get
Mr.
down
Quayle.
To the technicalities of it. Whose idea was it? How do you arrange to actually upchuck in unison like that? How did you practice first? How did you know you were going to get red, white, and blue?
These are wonderful
questions. I suppose we should start
we
at the beginning. Whose idea was this?
Yeah, let's talk about where the idea came from and who else is doing art like this if they are.
Well, to answer the second part of the question, we would really have to start with the person of Dan Quayle himself, who's been a big influence for all of us.
Clearly.
We're great admirers of his.
Dan Quayle.
He's an amazing performance artist.
Absolutely.
He's
absolutely
brilliant.
Well, are you going to explain to me, you people, how you came to you using your guts?
Well,
as brushes?
Yeah.
It was a gut reaction. That's true.
It was a gut reaction. Yeah, okay.
I can explain. If you're looking for the exact process as to how we went about it, I think we can pretty much explain that. We met on the roof of a parking garage, and
I had some mashed potatoes with me, and
okay, this is what we need to know.
Hey, pass the red.
Some of them were red, some of them were blue, and
some of them
were plain.
Well, I was carrying some blue ones. Well, there's no really big secret to it, actually.
Clearly. No, not at all.
Vinegar and ipecac.
Is what caused the...
Right.
If anybody wants to go into the business, I will say that I think vinegar is better than ipecac because it works almost immediately.
I'll have to disagree. I found the ipecac to work much better.
Really? It seemed, though,
the combination
didn't you find it work a long time take effect, however?
You are all painters, though, are you not?
Or artists of some form, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But there's no question about it, people. I am talking to serious artists. There isn't any question about that.
Ha ha ha.
I don't think so.
No, there's no
question. Well, it depends on whether or not you ask us if we take ourselves seriously. I don't know. Do you take yourself seriously?
So that's, again, I mean, getting back to the imposition of the gallery.
Clearly.
It is
clearly consumerism.
The imposition of seriousness
it's
is
amazing.
A real problem.
It's amazing
it's,
that
it's
in the
a
20th
very
century,
real problem.
With the liberalization of the media in art, the form is completely liberated in the 20th century. We see art that loses its form, that the whole point is the revulsion of form.
But we don't throw away the context. Oh, art, mm-hmm. People are just starting to throw away the context of art. And I think people can realize that art doesn't stop with the gallery door. It doesn't stop anywhere.
I would like to thank you all for coming.
Thank you
today.
For having us.
Thank you very much.
We've come to the end of this program. It was an exciting program for me. And I want you to give our best to the Malcolm X people.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We'll tell them. Yes. If there are anyone out there, if Group X is out there, we give you our best.
And thank
you.
Yes. And you're welcome.
Our best.
Yeah. And
thank you very much, Burrell Space.
Oh, you're welcome.
Retro.
Thorazine
Dream.
Thank you.
Infantile Smile.
Obligated.
Landfill.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Herb L. Remedies.
And be careful out there, folks.
And don't try this at home.
We are professionals.
If you have room for Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Oh, but please, if you have room for
please
ungrateful take it. Happy ungrateful take it.
All right, and take your bones with you, please, and the rest of your donut holes and the rest of your pie. Thanks again, and this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus.
Again, Jack Danger.
And I can't remember the name of that gallery that used to be right across the street from Powell's. Like on 10th, so like in the corner, it's probably a condo now or some crap. And they had the Burning the Flag Art Explosion. What was it called?
The Blue Gallery. I found a tape of that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So there they are, Burning the Flag. And she's just unstoppable.
We're in the Blue Gallery with Tim Brooks. You are having a flag desecration day. That's what
right.
You're calling it.
Right.
And what's going to happen?
Well, basically at 6 o'clock tonight, we're going to have a performance that is a flag-burning event, and we're going to burn an American flag. It's going to be pretty short and sweet, and that's about all there is to it.
And you have flag-burning kits?
That's true. We do have flag-burning kits for sale, which include a small American flag, a book of matches, and on the back, a list of 50 reasons to burn the flag, all for the low price of just $3.
Okay. Why are you doing this?
Well, we feel that there's been a lot of attacks on people's rights to dissent and to express their opinion happening lately. The president has taken the lead in proposing the first ever amendment to the Bill of Rights to prohibit people from burning flags. The only reason I can think of that he's doing this is to try to get political mileage out of it. He's obviously a person that's willing to sacrifice the Bill of Rights and the rights that we have in this country for the sake of votes and popularity. We think that's very dangerous. We don't agree with a lot of things the government's doing. We don't agree with a lot of things the flag stands for. And basically, we're affirming our right to dissent by burning a flag and trying to demonstrate that the symbol is not as important as the rights that we have and that we might want to maintain in this country.
Okay.
Julie stayed to cover the flag burning that evening. A group of people who objected to burning the flag showed up and confronted the people at the gallery. Julie recorded it.
We just lay down and let everybody do whatever they want. We don't have any morals. We don't have any hopes.
What
we don't have any desires. How many people?
About free rights.
How many people have free rights? How many people have lived and died?
Hey, that's our flag, man. That's what you fight for. That's our country. That's part of our country.
And to stand here and let somebody purposely set fire to it, you've got to be kidding.
Julie continued to record for at least 45 minutes as tempers flared and the ruckus got louder. Julie captured it all on tape.
Because y'all don't even know what the flag represents.
Oh, we're here
to
protect what the flag represents.
We're here protecting what the flag
represents.
What's that got to do with it?
On this, you think that you can talk as long as you agree.
Tell me
you're only
you
willing to let people live if they agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I bet.
No.
It's
better to get you away from us.
Again, you're proving it. You're proving it.
You have no respect for our country.
You have no respect for people being able to think without you.
Tim just stamped on the flag. He just burned it, and he just put it on the ground, stamped on it.
Hey, she protected the flag.
This man took you.
What it stands for. You're not.
There's a lot of tough-looking guys here, kids. I'm not kidding. This is a lot of tough people here.
Stands
for human rights, for the rights to do what they want. You're denying her right to protest. You're denying her right to protest.
Yeah, but he picked
it out of the way. I'm not going to take any further.
Well, why don't you be your
ask everyone else to be quiet.
You are listening to a tribute to Julie Bernard, who hosted KABU's Art Focus program for 23 years. Julie died last fall. She would have turned 90 this Sunday, March 20th.
My name is Arvie Smith. I'm a professor emeritus of Pacific Northwest College of Art, where I've worked for 25 years or so. And I met Julie Bernard, I believe, back in perhaps the 80s, and I think somehow we were doing a life drawing class together, and I don't remember the circumstances, whether I was teaching or if I were then a student at that time, but in 94, she asked me to be on her program, Art Focus, and for me, that was a real it was like a rite of passage into the art community here in Portland. And I was always eternally grateful to her for that, and that she interviewed me three other times as my career progressed. So she was very important and a friend and champion to the art community here in Portland.
Do you remember any kind of specific incidents or something about an interaction with Julie that comes to mind about your relationship with her?
Yes. I was just getting started. This is my second career. So I had just graduated Pacific Northwest College of Art, and I was showing at Blackfish Gallery. And there was an incident where a young man had been here in Portland, had been beaten to death by some white supremacists. And the newspaper, the headline was Boys Night Out. Now, these guys killed somebody, and it was Boys Night Out, and I was furious because it was a man of color, and he was beaten to death by these young white men having their boys' night out. So I did a painting and at Blackfish, and I was so furious that I was slinging red paint on the wall over the painting that I'd done of these masked white people, just lynching, basically. And Julie walked into the gallery, and she said, "This is really important work." Excuse me.
That's okay.
That was important.
She was very insightful and supportive.
Exactly. Yes. And that's how she was in all of our encounters. I considered her a friend. You know, we didn't go to parties together, but, you know, I'd see her at functions. And we were, you know, it was always good to see her. And I was encouraged that she spent so much time paying attention to the work that I was doing. Yeah, she's an icon. At college, Pacific Northwest College, she would interview a number of artists. As I said, it seemed like it was a rite of passage. So when someone was going to be interviewed on Art Focus at school, we'd all, you know, "Oh, what time are you going to be on?" You know, it was delightful to hear your colleagues being honored in such a way.
Hi, KABU. This is Paul Missel calling from Cleveland. Oh, Julie was a friend. Oh, we met in class at the Museum Art School, when it was called Museum Art School in those days, before we changed the name to Pacific Northwest College of Art. And Julie was in my night class. I was teaching a class in visual elements, which was our basic design class. And Julie was one of the students, and that's how we collided with one another, and what a joy she was to have in the class. She was just always a very upbeat, enthusiastic person, and she just enjoyed art, and this was her way of getting to learn more about it. And so she took this beginning design class from me and was a wonderful student. But it was mostly her attitude that was so refreshing. You know, the evening classes there, the continuing education classes at the Museum Art School at the time and still today, is kind of a mixed blessing of ages that come there. So I've had the good fortune to teach people from high school to seniors, and she came in as one of those seniors at the time, and she was just wonderful. So that was our first meeting, and then we've been friends all since then. We didn't touch base that often. She had me on the program once or twice. I think I did something there when she was doing something about Blackfish Gallery and one of our birthdays, I imagine, I think, with Barbara Black and Stephen Soil. The three of us are three of the remaining founding members of that cooperative, and so Julie had us on, and we had just a great conversation about the gallery. Another way we had of exchanging information is that somehow, and I think it had to do with one of the projects I gave at the class, I remembered we got on the subject, and I think it was something she turned in. We got talking about chickens, and I think that she had one of her projects had a chicken, and I asked about this chicken. And she says, oh, well, Paul, I have chickens. Don't you know that? Oh, yeah, I have wonderful chickens. And I said, well, you know, I've always wanted to have them. I'm really curious about these chickens. And she says, well, would you like some? And I said, sure, Julie, yeah, I'll take some chickens. And so she brought them out to my place out in Wilsonville, and I had a caged area that I made up for them, and I think she brought out about four chickens that turned into maybe 10 or 12 chickens, and there were these lovely little white puffed head kind of banty, I don't know, some kind of name for them, but they had these little blue, iridescent blue cheeks. And they're the most beautiful of chickens, and with those light blue eggs they would lay. And it just was a real joy to have a chicken ranch out there. So Paul Missel Chicken Rancher, thanks to Julie Bernard. And so we had a wonderful liaison that way and a rapport that way, over and above our aesthetic concerns. It reached the planetary concerns. We talk about chickens, I mean, the heavy stuff. But at any rate, she was such a lovely, lovely spirit. And I always enjoyed it when I saw Julie, because she could look up to you and, I mean, she just looked up. She was kind of, you know, a little shorter in stature is what I meant. And she would look up and just, and you just felt the doors opening. And you could just, those eyes just invited you in, and you were poof into a wonderful conversation about whatever it was that brought you together that moment. I believe what she did over the years with the program was a wonderful gift to this community. She literally was the first in line to do that type of thing, as far as I know, in the Portland area. And when I came, Portland was a pretty small art community, and this was back in the early 70s. You know, Portland, of course, exploded in a very wonderful way, and Julie was, I think, a part of that, because I think her program, making people aware of what an alive community we had there in Portland, was an incredible gift to all of us, and I think it's what really contributed to making the community grow. You know, I just am very much saddened by the loss, but I'm so grateful to have known her and to count her as one of my friends.
Tom Kramer.
And I think Portland, a lot of people don't understand, those of us who are native Portlanders, I remember when it was an absolute utopia, when over 50% of the people I met just anywhere in Northwest Portland, you could have conversations about Sartre or Picasso or Hemingway or anything really intellectual and anything bohemian and interesting. They were everywhere. Everybody drove Volkswagen buses and beat up cars, and there was no yuppie crap going on like there is now. And then, like I'm saying, those kinds of people, like Julie Bernard, I count among them, were the people that opened Portland up for everybody else.
I'm George Johansson. I'm a longtime painter in Portland. I knew Julie Bernard from way back, and I don't remember how we first met, but she seems to have been part of the Portland scene from very early days. I think she had a very good knowledge of Portland art history and of what had occurred over the years, and that really helped her a lot with her program. I think she was a really gracious person, And she also extended herself to try to include areas, investigate areas of art and look into areas of art that weren't necessarily right up her alley, but she was wanting to be very inclusive. As an interviewer, I think she was a very good listener. I always found it really easy to talk to her because she would listen to what you were saying and add to it. She didn't just have a list of questions that she was going by. So I was on her program a number of times.
I'm Jane Beebe. I'm owner-director of PDX Contemporary Art. Julie, we both had some common personal friends, and she would come into Jameson Thomas where I worked, so I knew her professionally as well. And she interviewed me a few times on cable for Art Focus, and she would come to see the latest shows and to talk with people and just to keep up on what was going on in art in Portland. She was delightful. She was one of a member of, I think they called themselves the Art Club or something, and it was a group of women, very smart, interested, and interesting women who would go around together, have lunch, and then go see all the shows at the various galleries. Julie was one of the most non-judgmental people I ever knew. She was very, very open to a huge variety of artistic expressions, and she had a wonderful, wonderful sense of humor. And there was nothing off the table with Julie. She loved Stuart Buehler. And there were some very, very funny interviews. She interviewed Stuart Buehler once, who was a very naughty guy, in William Jameson's backyard. And I don't know if you'd get a hold of the tape, but it was very funny. And then she interviewed him, I think, in the radio station, too. And he was always a loose cannon and hard to, and you'd hear Julie laughing and laughing.
Again, Jack Danger.
I remember Stuart Buehler riding the bike around the studio. She's just saying, could you please sit down? You know, the microphone won't be. He's like riding his bike around her. I mean, she just was a riot.
Julie Bernard.
Well, the Stuart Buehler tape was a wonderful tape, and Stuart was a lot of fun to talk to. When I interviewed him at the Jameson Thomas Gallery, and he took a couple of boxes and smashed them down, and then we went out and sat in the Tom McCall Park, Waterfront Park, on a couple of benches, the wet benches, and we put these boxes under our seats, and then he talked about his work, and he insisted that we put Muddy Waters behind the tape. I like what Stuart does, and we have a rapport, you might say. I understand what he's up to.
And it's time now for Art Focus with Julie Bernard. Good morning.
Well, Margaret, this morning Art Focus and a vast number of Stuart fans would like to welcome Stuart Buehler, who is has a cork project and is now aiming corks on a rubber band at the engineer, who is Margaret. And they're hitting the window, and you better stop doing that, you rotten kid. Okay, anyway.
That sounds a little bit like...
Stuart's work is now in the Archer Gallery in Geyser Hall on the campus of Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. And his latest artistic offerings can be seen in the installation called The Art of Installation, Three Interpretations. Other artists represented in the Archer Gallery are Case Lucerenko and Mark Mueller. And Case Lucerenko's work is designed around the romance novel, the Harlequin novel. And Mark Mueller's huge structural drawings are also in part of this gallery and part of this installation. Stuart Buehler hails from Trinidad, California. Now behave yourself. He's taking a picture of me. He was discovered by the late William Jameson and showed his work there over many years. At this time, Stuart is involved in the artistic transformation of ordinary wine corks. Hundreds of them. Will you stop that? Now he's got making noises into the microphone. Okay. Anyway, each cork
a separate and colorful art piece. They stack up in shapely fashion, housed together, filling four separate glass cases. A triumph of curatorship, and you and Carson Legree, who's the director of the gallery, you put this together, didn't you, Stuart? You're going to be a good kid now, huh?
Carson Legree and Lawrence and some work study students hung the show the other day.
Would you like to say good morning to the people out there?
Good morning, Portland. I was walking around the KBOO studios, and it's quite an exciting area.
It is an exciting area over here. Lots is happening.
I like the store that has all the plaster castings in it.
Plaster castings?
And then there's a trophy store.
Oh, yes.
That's real interesting.
Did you go in and examine the trophies there?
I took some photographs of the trophies.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, now, you've been creating cork assemblages for a lot of years, haven't you?
I used to use them just a little bit, and then a couple years ago I had a real bad attack of corkitis.
It became an obsession, didn't it?
It became an obsession.
In 2001, Julie was the key person in organizing an exhibition of KBOO artists, volunteers and staff who created art. The event also included several weekends of performance art events.
I'm Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher, and I knew Julie through being a volunteer at KBOO and meetings at her house to plan the Boo Art exhibit, which she masterminded, and of course, as a listener. As far as the Boo Art goes, I remember in general at the meetings that her emphasis wanted to be inclusive and supportive, and that she really put effort and energy behind making people feel safe and welcome and embracing the experimental and even the idea of trying. And therefore, the meeting was, rather than bogged down in everything, it did feel, of course, as often goes, way out to come back. But I think it needs to start way out sometimes. And even to her credit, to generate the enthusiasm and the interest. My memories of Julie are more general in feeling. She had a brightness and a lightness of being, and she kind of reminded me of a fashion accessory, a colorful scarf, or one of those natural daisy chain necklaces that you make. Her interviews could be about very serious subjects, but her attitude toward them was more interested and engaging than serious. The words I would use to describe are color, colorful, non-judgmental, and curious. Those are my memories of Julie.
My name is Janet Anderson. I met Julie while learning to board op in 1998. I was already a big fan from listening to her show, Art Focus. Her enthusiasm for art and artists was boundless as she visited galleries and arts events in order to prep for her interviews. Julie had a really amazing way of describing what she saw in someone's artwork, and for the listening audience, that was so important. And I just felt like I wanted to go see all of the shows that she was talking about because she could make them so interesting. And she had such a great sense of humor and didn't take herself too seriously. Her smile was radiant, and I miss her friendship.
This is Beth Hyams, and I met Julie as a fellow volunteer at KBOO. We became friends, and several times she came to my house on New Year's Eve, and I just loved Julie's adventurous intellect. There was just nothing she wasn't willing to think about or talk about. She was also really good at singing Auld Lang Syne on New Year's Eve. And when I visited her at her house, I really came to appreciate her knack for growing orchids and her really special connection with her turtle named Igor. I miss Julie all the time.
My name is Lisa Loving, and for a few years, I was Julie's producer on the Thursday morning radio zine, which was the longer show that her show, Art Focus, was part of. And I used to be so proud because Julie would run around and we would be together and she would meet fancy people and she'd say, "Oh, and this is my producer, Lisa Loving." I felt so shiny when she did that. She brought so many incredible artists of all kinds into the station, of all kinds. I remember one time she brought in a woman who had been a volunteer who was visually disabled. And she had discovered that this woman was actually, she drew. She did pen and ink drawing. But when we looked at the woman's art, it was as if it looked like a super elaborate scribble, but it wasn't. It was clearly portraiture. She was doing portraiture with multicolored ballpoint pens in the style of a scribble. It was freaking brilliant. My relationship with Julie changed one time when she was going to have a guest who had curated a photography show of Ansel Adams' landscape prints at the Oregon Forestry Center, I believe it was at. And the woman simply didn't show up for the show. So Julie and I were there with a hot couple of hot mics and a half hour of live programming. We had no show. But the thing is, I have this really bizarre family relationship to Ansel Adams. And somehow over the course of this half hour, Julie interviewed me about my family's relationship with Ansel Adams back in the 40s and 50s in Prescott, Arizona, is where my grandmother lived. And she somehow got me to reveal that as a child, I secretly believed that Ansel Adams was my real biological grandfather. Like pretty much the last thing I would ever admit in public, because that's really bizarre and obscure. But she drew it out of me in the course of a random interview that we had to do on the spur of the moment. And I think of her all the time as well. And I think of her turtle that used to crawl around her living room. I feel like, to me, the most remarkable thing about Julie Bernard was she was extremely sophisticated, extremely cultured, and also super duper earthy. So she could deal with very fancy artists, but she treated them with the same respect that she treated the visually disabled volunteer from the lobby that made this amazing, to be fair, art with the ballpoint pens. And in other words, you couldn't really overimpress Julie. But I remember her laugh, and I remember her red lipstick, and I remember her very fondly.
Tammy Dean interviewing Julie in 2008 after her last Art Focus show.
You better talk about Igor now.
Igor Leitmeigs.
Who's Igor?
Yeah, Igor. Well, you know how kids don't take very good care of their animals, and the time comes when it's either get rid of the animal grows and grows. So Dylan neglected his animal, and it turned up. So how I got an awful lot of animals that way. So I got Igor, and Igor at that time was a girl.
Uh-huh. No, it was a boy.
No, it was a boy, uh-huh. That's right. And we found out, and she laid some eggs in my possession. She laid some eggs. I went into her tank one morning, and there were these little white things that she was kicking around. And she didn't pay any attention to her eggs. She was the worst mother. She couldn't have cared less when she laid an egg. And she just pushed those eggs out, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I couldn't believe it. I thought she was all, why was she named Igor? You know, we'd had her for 5 years.
And never laid an egg.
She never laid an
Nobody
egg.
Nobody knows what kind of animal she is yet, I don't think.
Well, she's a Reeves turtle.
A Reeves turtle. And she's not in a tank anymore.
She's in and out of the tank.
Oh, I see.
And she has a box that she likes to climb into. Uh-huh. I let her out every day for a run. And what she does is run into my bathroom and get as close to the register as she can. Yeah.
Many have asked what happened to Igor. Julie's son, David Bernard, writes that, I'm happy to say that we found Igor a very nice retirement home. At the same time, we found one for Mom. Chris, Mom's long, much-beloved assistant, found a turtle rescue facility that finally gave Igor a real turtle environment where, we are assuming, he will outlive us all. We end this tribute with Julie's own reflections on her work on Art Focus.
Well, I hope I'm humble because the people that I'm talking to, I'm approaching them the same way that I feel an ordinary listener would. I'm hoping that I'm asking the questions that an ordinary person might ask going into the gallery and looking at the work. I try to ask what that person might ask. Mm-hmm. But maybe I sometimes when I take the tapes home and then I play them and I just really feel that I haven't done the artist justice. I want the artist to be able to say what he wants to say and get to the heart of it. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes feel that I haven't really asked the right questions. Mm. But I think that this is a service, and I think that it doesn't take a whole lot of art background to do what I'm doing. I don't feel that it does. I think that it just takes a curiosity and a love of the subject and a willingness to do the work. Talking to artists has been a real privilege for me because I have yet to find a single one that hasn't had something to give me. And it's a selfish thing in a way because I come out of here high sometimes. It just is a very inspiring thing to get to talk to people about the most important thing in their life. And they may be people that you don't know, you've never seen before, and you're talking to them about the thing that's closest to their hearts. And by the time you've had half an hour with a person like that, you feel that life is at last is worth going on. You know, makes life even more worth living. Yeah.
Has been a tribute to the memory of KBOO Art Focus host Julie Bernard, who died in October. She would have turned 90 on March 20th. Thanks to all the people who were interviewed for this program, and thanks to Joseph Gallivan for his help. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO.
By Triangle Productions. The play runs from March 10th through April 2nd at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Based on the classic 1989 film, Westerberg High is ruled by a shoulder-padded, scrunchie-wearing junta, Heather, Heather, and Heather, the hottest and cruelest girls in all of Ohio. But misfit Veronica Sawyer rejects their evil regime for a new boyfriend, the dark and sexy stranger JD, who plans to put the Heathers in their place, 6 feet under. Again, that's Heathers the Musical, March 10th through April 2nd at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Things will get better soon.
Yeah.
KBOO Community Radio and Friends of Clark County are proud to co-sponsor an evening of fun and food Saturday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Vancouver, Washington. The evening will feature live music by Dan Weber, a dinner provided by Chef Sebastian Carosi, speakers talking about Clark County's smart growth plans, and local farmers on the current challenges and rewards of farming in Clark County. Again, that's an evening of fun and food, Saturday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 4505 East 18th Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM, listener-sponsored community radio. I'm Lori Sonnenfeld, and so happy to be here today. I'm doing the show moving on once a month now, and so it's gotten really special for me, and I hope for you too. And Don Jacobson has picked up most of the other Fridays, where we come to you every Friday with